Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another Lights On listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. The Brain Massage Show radiates the mind with truth, releasing thought antibodies that attack and destroy lies. Stay tuned. The Brain Masseur is ready to massage your brain. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse, and your Brain Masseur. Get ready for your brain massage. The conspiracy to deconstruct American culture and uproot it from the Christian soil in which it was planted and in which it has grown has found many willing accomplices among Christians who are, ironically, aghast as they watch traditional America collapse like Building 7 on 9/11. Now, there's a mouthful. Oh, no, Yoko Ono claims she had an affair with Clinton. Not Billy, by the way. Hillary. Oh, yeah. Many have speculated that Hillary has some gender confusion of her own going on, you know, but Yoko has come out of her closet to say she and Hillary were together in one, anyway. Something of an item in the 70s, I understand. Recent battles over public bathroom etiquette. And I'm not talking about washing before, after, or before and after. Or having the courtesy to police your area as opposed to rudely leaving your mess for someone else. We're talking about whether men that are confused about their gender identity should be trusted to use public restrooms with our wives and daughters. What happened to Flight 804? Departed from Paris on its way to Cairo a little after, I think it was 11 p.m. Paris time, May 18th. Disappeared about 2:30 a.m. May 19th. No Americans and no Israelis were on board. Our hearts break for the families who lost loved ones. Trump thinks it's probably another terrorist attack. Hillary's convinced Trump is fueling terrorist recruitment. No terrorist group has taken credit. However, some suggest that would be because this is only the opening salvo in our series of planned attacks. Oh, my, I sure hope not. Well, my friends, you're in for a very interesting brain massage today. Hold on.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
All right, let's address the downing of Egypt Air Flight 804. It departed Paris about 11 p.m. May 18. The Charles de Gaulle International Airport is a very modern one. Been through that a couple of times. Enjoyed my first espresso at a coffee bistro there some years back. That's before 9/11, especially at the Paris airport. By the way, that's 2 hours from Paris by car. Security is really quite intense, and understandably so. They assign what are called red badges to those who are cleared to work in the airport, and last year, something like 70 employees had their badges revoked when evidence surfaced implicating them as having been radicalized. Now, as we all know, Paris has been a terrorist hotspot of concern for some time now, especially since the Hebdo atrocity. Well, the plane in question is an Airbus 320. By all accounts, very modern, all the latest equipment, considered among the safer aircraft that are in service today. This plane was on its way to Cairo, Egypt, and the ETA was 3:15 a.m. Cairo time, May 19. At 37,000 feet and about 1:24 a.m., the plane entered Greek airspace and had contact with air traffic control at about 1:48 a.m., with no problems reported. At 2:27 a.m., Athens air traffic control attempted but failed to make contact with the plane. And within about 2 minutes, the plane suddenly swerved hard left in a 90-degree turn and then spun 360 degrees to the right, dropping from 37,000 to 15,000 feet in only a period of a couple of minutes and then disappeared from radar. There were a total of 66 passengers on this flight, all presumed lost. 10 crew, 56 passengers. And a breakdown of the passengers by nationality looks like this. 15 French, 30 Egyptian, 2 Iraqis, and then one each from Britain, Belgium, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Sudan, Chad, Portugal, Algeria, and Canada. No Americans or Israelis were on the plane. At the time of show prep, they did find some debris from the plane, but no determination has been made about how it is the plane went down. No passengers are thought to have survived. Now, you know, Egypt has had some problems with their airline. The latest was the so-called love jacking of a domestic flight that was by that hijacker diverted to Cyprus by the name of Seif Eldin Mustafa. And he said he hijacked the plane in order to see his estranged wife, hence love jacking. Earlier hijackings were not so cute. The first, in 1976, ended with all the passengers killed, and another later in 1985 ended with 58 of 95 passengers killed. You might remember 1999, Egypt Air Flight 990 plunged into the water near Nantucket, and all 217 passengers and crew and so on were killed. Speculation continues whether or not the pilot purposely crashed the plane as an act of terrorism. Trump jumped on this as another example of national and international laxness on the problem of Islamic extremist terrorism, suggesting that incidents of terrorism are increasing because Obama, Hillary, and other world leaders are approaching the threat of terrorism from a politically correct perspective and not taking the problem seriously, as they should. Well, he took to Twitter about 6 a.m. and tweeted, quote, "Looks like yet another terrorist attack. Airplane departed from Paris. When will we get tough, smart, and vigilant? Great hate and sickness," end quote. Well, Trump went on through the day answering questions invited by his comments, saying effectively that Obama and Hillary's position on terrorism has encouraged more of this behavior, and that San Bernardino, California, along with the late spate of terrorist attacks in Paris and Brussels, show that the United States is less safe under his watch. And of course, he's insinuating, and in some cases outright stating, that this will continue under Hillary. Well, the mainstream media's response has been, first, to decry Trump's rashness in jumping to conclusions before evidence was in. Well, that never seemed to bother them or hinder them when Obama did it repeatedly. Hillary hesitated to call it terrorism, but later in the day admitted that it does look like an act of terrorism. That's very interesting. Hillary's response to Trump's implication that Obama and she are responsible for these terrorist attacks was to say that she has proof that Islamic extremists are using Trump's call for a temporary ban on Muslim immigration to recruit jihadis. You know, as if that's what makes jihadis, or if they wouldn't recruit otherwise. Anyway, in other words, Hillary is saying it's policies like those Trump will pursue that will encourage more terrorist attacks. Well, my friend, was the downing of Egypt Air Flight 804 a terrorist attack? You know, it really does look that way. I mean, what we know for sure about the last few minutes of the flight before it disappeared from radar suggests something really bizarre happened to make the flight jerk left 90 degrees and then turn to the right a full 360 circle, plunging, meanwhile, over what, 10,000 or more feet, before it disappeared from radar. Now, some of this could be readings from debris going different directions, which would strongly support the scenario of an explosion. I mean, really, what else could cause such a violent disruption of the flight path? I mean, a loss of thrust or a freak stall, something like that, which both are very unlikely. But in a case like that, it would likely rapidly descend, but in a glide path, not jerk left, then right, and all that. Again, the radar very likely was picking up large pieces of the plane going different directions to account for that. Otherwise, that's a very bizarre activity of that plane. Anyway, it's not hard to figure out what would cause that kind of anomaly on the radar screen. It would be an explosion. So let's say it is an act of terrorism. And if it is, we are entering a new game here, my friends. As we all know, terrorists target very specifically and symbolically. Why would they attack an Egyptian airline and with no Americans or Israelis on it? I guess it's possible the Muslim Brotherhood, you know, Obama's terrorist division. Yeah, sort of joking, but look into the allegations that Obama is actively working behind the scenes to return his Muslim Brotherhood buds to power in Egypt. So maybe the Muslim Brotherhood is sending a message to Egypt's rulers about what they can expect if they continue to deny power to them. You know, because this really is a new thing here, my friend. A terrorist attack that symbolically would target Muslims? An Egypt air flight? People with 60% Muslims, by the way. You know, with a Muslim pilot who, by all accounts, was reputed as a very faithful and well-beloved fellow Muslim. I mean, terrorists have to live among their Muslim neighbors, you know. And this attack would be difficult for a typical Islamist terrorist to justify. I mean, we've got pictures of Muslim mothers, wives, children, grandmothers weeping for their lost Muslim sons, brothers and sisters, and so on. That does not send a positive message to fellow Islamists, does it? I mean, unless they can somehow contrive to say Americans did it, that it is an act of American terrorism against Muslims, or they'll somehow come off with some story about Israel did it. But I don't know, it's going to be a hard sell, you know. Although they are as clever as any American conspiracy theorists ever have been at spinning conspiracies out of very thin strings of evidence into whole blankets of outrageous accusations. Which brings me to Building 7. Do I have time? Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead with this for now. It sets up the next segment. So, I can abbreviate it. A friend sent some information to me about the collapse of Building 7 on 9/11. It's very interesting, by the way, and helpful. Remember, the planes flew into Buildings 1 and 2 of the World Trade Center. That's World Trade Center 1, World Trade Center 2. It's the way they addressed them. Other buildings were also damaged. But the only other high-rise that collapsed completely was Building 7. World Trade Center Buildings 1 and 2 and 7 were, it just so happens to be the case, the most secure buildings in the group and the most security-sensitive buildings in the group. Building 7 was called Giuliani's bunker, by the way. When you look at pictures of the collapse of World Trade Center 1, 2, or 7, we notice all of them collapse straight down, the way we've seen these high-rise buildings collapse when they are intentionally demolished. In fact, if you watch pictures of intentionally demolished buildings and the collapse of Building 7 particularly, well, it's identical. I mean, every feature compares. At least with World Trade Center 1 and 2, there was some hesitance and some anomalies to the usual way a building falls when it's demolished on purpose. One of them, I think it was Building 1, began to lean momentarily just a little bit before it then collapsed on itself. And we know that Buildings 1 and 2 were struck by the terrorists flying jets into those buildings. We watched that happen, so it's easy to accept the idea that the collapse of those buildings was at least related to the terrorist attacks. But Building 7 is a different story. It wasn't attacked by an airplane. It fell straight down without any hesitance during its collapse. But here's the strangest thing of all. Apparently, BBC, British Broadcast Company, can tell the future because in a video of a British news reporter linked with a reporterette in New York with the World Trade Center buildings in the background, talking about the collapse of Building 7 with Building 7 in the picture or in the background while the report is being delivered. Now, if the building had collapsed, how is it right there in the picture while they're talking about it being collapsed? But anyway, you look more closely and you begin to notice a little something interesting. You know what? I am out of time for this segment. Hold on to the break. I'll be right back.
Warning. We have learned that some liberals choke on even a small piece of Pastor Scheibach's mind. If you've got a piece of Pastor's mind stuck in your throat, there's only one way to get it out. Call 888-770-8000 and give him as big a piece of your own mind as you can find. Call 888-770-8000 and don't worry, Pastor Scheibach can take it. Call 888-770-8000 and leave your message during the break. Your brain massage will continue in just a moment. Every corruption we see in our houses of government began in our houses of worship. Christians began departing from the founders of our faith and ignoring God's laws long before our politicians began departing from our founders and ignoring the laws of our land. Revival must begin in the house of God with a return to the old paths. Lighthouse Baptist Church invites you to join us on the old path. Call 347-9887 or go to santamarialighthouse.org for more information. Satan is called the dragon and prince of the power of the air. The devil beware. Pastor Scheibach is on the air, swinging the sword of truth at the dragons of deceit, thrusting the blade of incisive insight into the belly of liberal lies, lies that blind man's mind in darkness. He wants to know if you have his back. Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. Encounter God. The word encounter means to meet, to experience, to come face to face with, to confront. The greatest life-changing encounter in any life will be those encounters with God that make a difference. Perhaps it's been a while since you've experienced God in a vital, meaningful encounter. Renew your experience of God with a fresh encounter this year that will impact your life for spiritual growth. Or perhaps you've never experienced God and He doesn't seem real to you. You can encounter God, and when you do, you'll know that God is real. Lighthouse Baptist Church, 1310 West Bedaravia Road, Santa Maria.
Enjoying your brain massage experience? Do you wish everyone could? Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. Stand by. Five, the Brain four, Massage Show three, is about two, to blow your mind.
Hello and welcome back. I'm Jerry Scheibach, pastor at the Lighthouse, your brain masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter. Lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singling the enemy is on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. The demolishing of our culture, the intentional demolition of that building called America. I ended the last segment talking about the famous BBC video of a British newscaster during a news update purportedly broadcasting a report from a BBC reporterette on assignment in New York on 9/11. Behind her was a picture of the World Trade Center buildings, and the Twin Towers are missing in the picture, but Building 7 is still standing. And with this picture in the background, the reporters are discussing the collapse of Building 7. The conspiracy theorists rest much of their arguments on this intriguing video. So much so that even though there are questions about the collapse of the Twin Towers, I notice they focus pretty much exclusively on Building 7, and no doubt that's because it's the easier one to prove was intentionally demolished. So, does Building 7 prove the entire 9/11 attack was orchestrated by government insiders? Did Bush do it after all? And not everybody who believes that it was done by insiders thinks Bush was involved. And was it done in order to justify getting America into a war with Islamic terrorists, or to get our hands on Mideast oil, or some other greedy capitalist conspiracy, you know, to take over the whole world and make the poor people suffer so rich guys like Trump can live big? Okay, but really, there's no doubt in my mind Building 7 was an intentional demolition. Now, I don't know how much farther I can go with my friends who build the grand 9/11 conspiracy on this that branches out in so many different directions it's bewildering, but that much does seem to me to be certain. So first, why do I believe Building 7 was purposely demolished? Well, partly because of the rumors that the owners gave instructions for the building to be demolished. I mean, I watched a fella connected with the owners, if he wasn't one of the owners himself, actually explain why they wanted the building to come down. Now, we know that rescue workers were told on the ground on 9/11 that Building 7 was going to be intentionally demolished. I know they have built a new 7 World Trade Center building, and it's a pretty thing. 52 stories, you know, with one basement story. The old 1987 building had 42 stories, and it had become something of an eyesore, real dated architecture and all that. This one sparkles. Maybe someone should check to see if there was an insurance scam run here, except I don't know of any insurance protection you can buy that covers acts of war, unless you get it from London, but anyway. Maybe they figured taxpayer money would flow into a rebuild, and they hoped to position themselves to get in on it. Or maybe they just simply decided this might as well take it down, and, you know, we're going to have to rebuild here. As for the building collapsing on itself in exactly the manner that an intentionally demolished skyscraper would come down, is not itself a conclusive proof. In the case of Building 7, it is interesting that every aspect of its 7-second collapse argues in favor of intentional demolition. Let me explain. In order for a skyscraper to come down that quickly, it would be necessary for there to be no resistance from floor to floor, and it would have to occur from top to bottom, with each succeeding floor giving way evenly in succession all the way down. Now, friends, that really can't happen unless this is built into the design of the structure to begin with. Now, listen up. Otherwise, a building that tall would not likely be compromised so evenly across every floor, and that consistently from floor to floor. I mean, we're talking times 42 floors here. We would expect a tall building to fall in one or another direction sideways, in the direction of the compromised section of the building, right? Well, of course, right. And in fact, not only are you and I able to understand such simple and basic laws of physics, having ourselves watched a few apples fall from the tree, okay, Isaac Newton, I mean, some basic notions of physics are ingrained into our thinking from a very young age, so we would expect a very tall building struck on, say, the south side to collapse toward the north, right? Again, very intelligent architects are savvy to that level of physics, trust me. Now, if you construct multiple skyscrapers in a cluster, you might figure that in the event of a severe earthquake or some other disaster, one of these colossal giants would fall over and topple into another one, which would start a devastating domino effect, destroying multiple buildings and many thousands of lives. So you might decide that in the event of an unforeseen disaster that would topple your skyscraper, well, that you would want your building to fall straight down, like they do when intentionally demolished. And then you might contrive to construct the building with a mechanism that would trigger a self-demolition of the building in the event of such a disaster. I mean, we really can't have 100-story tall buildings falling down on people and cars and into each other now, can we? I read somewhere, some many years ago, it might have been back when I was thinking about getting into the rebar business for construction, I was approached by a businessman while I was in high school and encouraged to think about a career in that direction. And so I'm studying the various sizes and the uses and so on of rebar. And I think it was and steel and girders. And then I remember coming across an explanation that these tall skyscrapers are constructed to fall in on themselves in the event they're structurally compromised. Now, that's not widely known. And it's not something they really want to talk a lot about in public. I've read some stuff recently that talk about how this is one of those little secrets the industry does not feel comfortable making public in order to avoid scaring people away from entering these tall skyscrapers. Now, I remember doing a show on this way back. I mean, we're talking 2002 or 3, not long after 9/11, when the conspiracy theories were being constructed up over this and addressing that issue then. And so what I think happened is that the planes striking the Twin Towers compromised them sufficiently to trigger this safety feature constructed into those buildings. However, as we all know, Building 7 was not struck, and the reported fires, by all accounts, could not possibly have generated sufficient heat to melt the steel, to compromise that steel structure to the point of causing it to collapse. Furthermore, we know there were two very loud explosions that preceded the collapse of Building 7. And that the building collapsed at a rate that would only be consistent with an intentional demolition, taken together with the fact that it occurred much later in the day. And the rumor added to all this that the owners themselves called for the building to be collapsed and warned the workers there on the ground that this was going to happen. Okay, what about the prescience of BBC? Are they fortune tellers? You know, if you look at that video carefully, you will notice Jane Stanley, the reporterette on the scene, was standing in front of Building 7 in the video. And even though the reporter, and I can't find that guy's name, but the male reporter in Britain anchoring World News Update on that auspicious day, he's talking about Building 7 having collapsed. So how does that work? Well, there are many ways to explain what happened and why BBC would be reluctant to fess up. It's possible the rumor that Building 7 was to collapse got to BBC before it occurred. I mean, this rumor spread around the ground. People were telling each other, okay? But perhaps, and you know, you've played Pass It On, where you whisper a story in someone's ear, they whisper it to another and to another and to another, and by the time it gets to the end of the room, it's fascinating sometimes how the story morphs into something completely unrecognizable. Or perhaps they weren't told it was an intentional demolition and assumed that it had already occurred. Okay, so what's with the picture in the background showing Building 7? Well, have you ever heard of green screen technology? We use it. It's been around a while. I think what happened is BBC got the news about the collapse of Building 7, but their reporterette was no longer on the scene. Scenes that they had shot earlier, see. So they shot her in front of a green screen and dropped an earlier image of the World Trade Center buildings behind her. And that was the embarrassing mistake that Jane talked about later but never clarified. Now, that does not have the same sizzle as the scintillating tale that has been spun by those who traffic in conspiracy theories. I know that. But I also know that very, very often, that is exactly what I discover after spending hours and hours trying to unravel one of these things, beginning with no biased opinion either way, and following the rule of accepting the most natural and the easiest explanation for these sorts of things. The least complicated explanation. So, what does this have to do with my opening statement for the show today? I mean, in what way does the intentional demolition of Building 7, together with the terrorist attack and subsequent destruction of the highly symbolic Twin Towers, connect with the point of this show? That is, that Christians have unwittingly been complicit in the demolition of this republic. And how do you put all that together with the Yoko Oh No revelation about hilarity? Or Trump's moral elasticity on the question of male perverts sharing restroom facilities with the wives and daughters of his guests at his hotels, and whether Trump or Hillary will serve us best in our war against terrorism. Well, you see, America was constructed on the Christian values and beliefs that are plainly laid out in the Bible. Samuel Adams, often quoted for his decidedly Christian worldview, along with the great George Washington and many others of our founders, such as Patrick Henry and Alexander Hamilton and so many others, Christian men who held high office and helped shape our republic and build our nation under God upon the gospel of our Savior, Jesus Christ, who is Lord of all. And this nation under God grew into a great building housing the ideal of liberty and justice for all. Even in its early days of construction, there were those who planted the charges in strategic places that under a specific set of circumstances could explode and bring down this republic upon itself. How often did our founders warn us that this nation was only suitable to a religious people, a people whose morals were instructed by, specifically, the Christian religion, upon the notion that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights? As Reagan observed, if we forget that we are one nation under God, we will be a nation gone under. Remember that? Perhaps he was simply following a play on the words, but in any event, the statement is prophetic. Was he purposely referring to Psalm 9:17, where we are warned those nations that forget God will be turned under? That is, according to that text, turned into hell. Jeremiah outlined God's indictment against Judah in the day he judged that nation and took away their kingdom and gave it to another. And at the top of the list of his indictments is this: they had forgotten God. They had turned their backs on God. They decided they didn't need God, and so they were increasingly taken over by all sorts of moral evils, including the murder of their children and sacrifice to their idols, and we sacrifice ours to our covetousness, which is idolatry, and fornication of all forms, including adultery, extramarital relations, acting like dogs, you know, and perversity of all sorts, so much so God would refer to Jerusalem as Sodom. Hillary, perhaps our first female and first lesbian president. Trump, a vile man by anyone's reasoned reckoning, a flat-out liar, and a despot. Anyone that would attempt to use the government to steal property from a widow is a cad in my book, and I'll forgive him when he asks for forgiveness, okay? I'll have no part in making that man president. Either of them takes our country another step toward European socialism. The homosexual agenda is being used like demolition charges to bring down this house that freedom built. And yet, there is hope. That hope is in Christ Jesus, our Lord. I'm doing a series on conspiracy theories from my pulpit on Sunday nights, but if all you want is sensationalism and to have your evil suspicions confirmed, you're not going to like it. Because, you know, I'm just going to be honest about the whole thing. If what you want is clear-headed and biblically supportable understanding that will help you discern the real conspiracy, because there is one, behind all the theories that are woven in thousands of different directions to the point of just neutralizing it from having any effect at all, well, then you'll find this series to be very, very interesting and very, very helpful. It's 6 p.m. at the Lighthouse. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch, and now you let me know if you see that they are on. Call 1-888-770-8000. That's 1-888-770-8000 and say, "Lights on" if you agree, "Lights off" if you disagree. If you prefer it, you can write me an email. Go to thebrainmassageshow.com. That's thebrainmassageshow.com. You'll find there a place to write me an email. And I look forward to hearing from you. Look forward to seeing you in church. God bless you. God save America. And I'll see you in church.
The science of a brain massage. The brain masseur uses words like fingers to massage your gray matter, forming insights in the mind that stimulate the pituitary to signal the adrenal to release noneparephrine neurotransmitters and to fire these neurons through the sympathetic nervous system affecting the heart. The skilled brain masseur uses incisive logic to arrest our attention and nuanced razor-sharp rhetoric to cut away the tangled knots in our brains. When these knots are removed, the electrical impulse of stimulating insights fire the neurotransmitters so they can leap the synapse gaps. This generates a sparkling effect in the brain that can cause the countenance of a brain massage listener to glow. Additionally, sudden outbursts of energy caused by the release of glucose throughout the body increases the heart rate, while the pituitary gland in the brain releases all five types of dopamine at once. And this creates that sense of euphoria experienced by many brain massage listeners. And that's the science of a brain massage.
Satan is called the dragon and prince of the power of the air. The devil beware. Pastor Scheinbach is on the air, swinging the sword of truth at the dragons of deceit, thrusting the blade of incisive insight into the belly of liberal lies, lies that blind men's mind in darkness. He wants to know if you have his back. Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today, or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457.
For a complete brain massage experience, tune in Saturday at 12 noon